can of worms that may be involved with some very heavy people. They may not care anymore, but if they do, then that's not good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so we better leave it. Okay, so just to finish this little section, your life cannot be one thing and what you preach something else. This creates a question as to the gap between his actions and the actions he, as a teacher, advised others to take. Is there a moral issue regarding this cover-up, or is the enlightened man above the moral standards of the culture?
But he didn't teach.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he definitely thought that UG took Krishnamurti further. You don't think UG took Krishnamurti any further.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
All I know is that from the get-go with me, when I tuned into the Krishnamurti principle energy, I utilized it myself from that point on to this day, and have never changed. That first and last freedom clue gave me the thing by which I lived and went through all these incredible things intact. And I don't think that I could have done it without having followed the challenge to discovery. You know the film that we made?
Yes.
All right. The challenger was a clue, and the next shuttle that went up was the discovery. And those are a clue. That's kind of like a bad joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it also is the clue that you cannot perceive in levels of awareness without challenging your own mind and its conditioned thought to the point where the conditioned thought is insignificant. It's no longer significant. You're not blanking it out or controlling it or denying it. You're acknowledging it as to what it is. It's a conditioning that started at a certain point, and you don't need that anymore. All right, you do that with enough areas of your mind, and pretty soon your mind is less reactive and more challenging in higher and higher vibes, and that's how I got clear enough to function.
Right.
And that was thanks to Bob when he came down and gave me the book and etc., and I saw the things that I had written that paralleled it, and I took that triangulation, Krishnamurti's First and Last Freedom, Joel Goldsmith, The Infinite Way, and about 20 pages that I had been writing that paralleled them, and those became probably impressed on my brain enough that it affected my motivation for most everything else. And if things moved through the motivation, then I would take action and get results. Is that too complicated? Or
no. That's clear, and I've heard.
All right, but see, that started right there at the Center of Integration when I first moved in, and he gave me that book a couple of weeks later, and I looked into it, and so it became a part of my syntax and my challenge and the source of my discoveries.
Did you say syntax?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meaning,
okay.
You know the word it means.
Yeah. So what's it? That's why we're reviewing this book. Here's a person who had a big influence on you, and then you both carried on with the same interests or inspirations.
I know, but my commentary here is not of superiority or anything else, but I feel that his magician experience involving the gaff, that somewhere in there is a conditioning of always looking for the gaff, and that rides through all these different twists and turns up through the years.
Yeah.
And if somewhere he had gotten enough of a challenge in there to even challenge this questioner of his mind and where's the gap, then there may have been a lot of pure experiences he could have gone through without that interference.
Yeah, I get you. I'll be very interesting.
But that's my That's just my speculation and my feeling, which is not to denigrate him at all. It's just like he's still a work in progress like everybody else, and but it is glorious.
Right, and he would agree with you. Now, he heard, I think he listened to the session we did, either the last one or the one before, and he did say that, and I don't like to say this because it's when we get you two talking, you guys can talk directly, but he said, what Dave is remembering is sounds like total fantasy to me. I don't remember that at all. And you know, he had a couple of problems. It was that period 63-64 when you went back down to San Francisco and met Wes Wilson, and you talked about showing the badge to to Wes
Wilson. He doesn't remember that?
No, he says that's a pure fantasy from his point of view.
No, I could even tell him some more things that happened
okay.
in that session. And he might remember those because they involved him more directly. There was one point where here we're on acid, and he's doing a thing, and he's holding his hands, and is like he's got his hands all pulled together and looking at it, and I'm going with it, looking at it, and he's looking aside to me, and the others are watching what the hell's going on here, and I'm looking at it, and I said, well, what you got there? And he just takes it like he's holding it, you know, he's going, take it away. And I said, oh, can I have a little bit? And he pulls it away a little bit more. And I said, give me just a little bit. And he's pulling more. And so I keep going, just a little bit. So he starts to bring it around to it, and then I come with both hands down on his, and I say, I want it all. Everybody, it just shattered the whole session with everybody. It was in that same session.
Wow. Well, I hope he heard this. I don't know if he heard the opening hours. You know, that's 19 hours ago. But he did hear the 16th or 15th or 17th hour.
But that's the only thing he questioned?
And other things in passing, when we talk about general stuff, he said, well, I don't remember that. But, like he questioned that the acid came from Hubbard. And we discussed that the last session where he calls the guy Stan in New York. You didn't know that and you think that's something else, but he thinks he got the acid at that time. So he quibbles on the sequence of the arriving.
Well, my feeling is that I didn't. I know that the key guy who was in control of it said yes, and we were going to get some.
Yeah.
Now,
that
whether
Craig?
Any...
Is that Craig? Is that Craig or Hubbard?
Well, I think it was through the exegesis of Hubbard that... But I thought there was a more direct statement from Hubbard that we would get some. But as I told you before, it's quite possible, since I had turned over the processing of most things, because I wanted to work with therapy and they wanted to work with the organizational stuff.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, after all, I was president, but only as like a figurehead as far as I was concerned, but other people didn't think I was, and so they came at me first.
They didn't
of course,
think,
I had the first acid.
You're saying they didn't think of you as figurehead. They thought of you as president.
Well, yeah, I know. But then as I got to talking, I knew that the elements involved were much deeper than that. That's when Bob and Cotty came in. And so then, as far as I'm concerned, it was turned over. Not everything. Just the turned over of the... whatever it was going, and then I was called the trip master, and even by them, you know.
Right.
But at any rate, the trip with getting the acid could have very easily been arranged between these other people, and that all could have been here. You know, I'm going to have to close off because I'm going to have to go to the bathroom.
Okay, we'll just take a break. We can...
All right.
No problem. Okay, we just took a little break. Now, Dave, Bob is curious about what happened at Krishnamurti's foundation and he thinks Elaine knows something and was holding it back. So he says, Elaine stayed at my house for a week and gave some talks in the living room. A few people came. Elaine did not speak about his life with JK. It seems.
Now, this is in Seattle?
Yeah, this is in 69.
At the, down by the house that he referred to with
yeah,
the
Lake Union.
Yeah, okay. Those things I don't know about.
Yeah. And he says, Elaine Nade seemed he wanted to put that behind him. But he did speak about being alone, about being self-reliant and open to love. At the end of the week, a friend called and arranged for Elaine to visit Bellingham, just north of Seattle. Another friend of mine, a pilot who had just returned from Vietnam, flew us in a plane to Bellingham. We left Elaine at the small airport, and he was picked up by one of the students. He stayed there for about a week and then returned to Seattle. The mystery of why Elaine had left Krishnamurti remained unsolved. The following week, Cindy and Margot took off for Europe, and I did not see Cindy for several months. So he is intrigued by what happened to Krishnamurti, and then that's why I jumped to the end of the book where he talks about the affairs that Krishnamurti was having. And he doesn't say it blatantly, but it seems like he's saying that that was partly maybe something Elaine knew about and was a problem for Elaine, and Elaine left. He doesn't say that, but it seems to be implied.
I think there's another thing, but I don't have anything to base it on, so I'm not going to mention it.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to go to a part which is interesting. After he discusses what the daughter of Rajagopal Sloss, Radha Rajagopal Sloss, said, the daughter is Radha Rajagopal Sloss, and the mother is Rajagopal? Like, can you name, what's the husband's name and what's the mother's name? Can you say them?
Raja Gopal, I don't know what her name was.
Oh, okay. So so the daughter is Radha Rajagopal Sloss. Anyways, he finishes up.
I guess the whole last name is Rajagopal, right?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Raja Gopal, but maybe it's all one name.
It says,
I forgot.
Yeah, one word. It says Rajagopala, P-A-L-A. Rajagopala.
Huh.
Anyways, right after that, after he's making these questions about the gaffe of Krishnamurti, he then...
The gaffe?
Yeah, the gaffe in Krishnamurti.
Does he use the word gaffe?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So then he goes into Yuji. He now shifts to Yuji, and this is the point. He's going to explain, he's sort of, quote, favoring Yuji. So after raising these questions about Krishnamurti's hypocrisy, he says, Yuji married young. After
all right. Now, what I'm having to say to you about editorializing, that it may very well be that some of these concepts solidified well after he was with UG, and he's transliterating them back before as a justification of why he went to UG. Actually, I think he just went because he was interested.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah, he did find UG interesting, and yeah, and he's writing a book, and when you write a book, you got to have a purpose. So he's making
a
purpose.
as well as he's spouting his beliefs or his non-beliefs and et cetera in a certain order, and there's narratives of that go through that seem to have nothing to do with what's going on, you know, just like you talk to me.
Yeah. And they always come back to relevant themes. I was just saying that
with Scott
in the break.
But in most cases, I'm not usually justifying actions based on thoughts that somebody else has supposedly had.
Right. He does get sort of, quote, fed up with Yuji, and the book ends with him, like, saying, well, no, nothing. There is nothing, and that's what we can't handle. But we're talking about his transition. You like that, right? There's nothing. That's what we can't handle.
Yeah, I'm just having a ball.
Yeah, okay.
Or two.
Okay. Did you say like you?
No, or two.
Oh, or two. All right, just like you, yeah. Okay, so he says, UG married young. There's some interesting statements here. We read another part of the book last time, a bit about UG's background, but he goes into it this way. UG married young. After practicing yoga in the caves of Rishikesh under the guidance of one Swami Shivananda, he rejected the whole Hindu experience and culture. Quote, it went out of my system, is what UG says. Quote, all the experiences that meditation produces are projections of thought and are dead, unquote. He once visited Ramana Maharishi, the well-known South Indian guru. UG asked him, can you give me what you have? And Ramana answered, yes, I can give, but can you take it? Would you regard that as just the usual traditional answer, meaning you're not ready, you have to do more work, and then maybe in the future you might be ready? Eugene says he did meet Jiddu Krishnamurti many times alone and also with his wife. At one point, during a conversation with J.K., he asked him whether there was anything to the abstractions he was giving out to his audience. J.K.'s answer was, you have no way of knowing. Now, this, he's repeating this. We read this in another part of the book. Then he says, that, Eugene says, was the end for him of talking with J.K. Now he was on his own two feet, free of the authority of another. He would find the truth for himself and by himself. After a period of time, Eugene's marriage broke up, and he and his wife separated. At the time, they were living in America. Eugene sent his wife and four children back to India, and he drifted to New York and later to London. Having spent all his money, he was taken in for a while by the Ramakrishna Mission in London. They asked him to do some writing and editing for the Ramakrishna Centennial Magazine. This sounds familiar. I read this to you, but I think he had written differently here. He gives a little more detail. I'm not sure. UG earned enough money to live on and go to Switzerland, where he settled down with a Swiss lady named Valentine, who was some 20 years older than he. They moved about in Europe and spent their summers in the mountains of Switzerland. This period of his life is covered in the first book of conversations with UG called The Mystique of Enlightenment. People who know both Krishnamurtis try to link them up and fit them into some relationship. The followers of Jiddu Krishnamurti say, UG begins where JK stops. Those are the followers of JK who come to know UG after realizing that they were not making any progress towards their spiritual goals. When you have come to the fact that you are not going to get anything from your guru, you have no choice but to move on to the next teacher and hope you will get what you think you want.
And that's when you miss the point of Krishnamurti.
Yeah. So then he says, UG often says, quote, you are not going to get anything from me, so just forget it. Now, I don't know if Krishnamurti would say it that way. You're not going to get any from me, so just forget it. You know, Krishnamurti wouldn't say that, right? Jiddu wouldn't say that.
No, but he did make it clear that you were your own guru if there was going to be one.
Yeah.
And if you tried to place it on him, why, he wasn't there.
He said it more politely and more consistently.
Totally.
Yeah,
it's like there's a pamphlet that was about, I don't know, maybe 30 pages. I remember David Millett had one, but it was something that was published long before called The Path. And in this, basically, Krishnamurti says, if you try to follow my path, are you going to have a rough time? Because nobody can follow my path, because my path will become so horrible that you won't be able to stand it and you'll stop following because you can't follow my path.
Mm.
You know, it's like a 30-page rant of anybody who's trying to follow him.
Yeah. And that was done maybe in the 40s?
I have a feeling that it was published in Italy.
Which might be the 50s then, I guess.
No, it could have even been in the 30s.
Oh, okay. All right. So, but Bob says, after UG says, you're not going to get anything from me, so just forget it. Bob says, Krishnamurti appeared to offer some hope to his followers by describing the state of bliss or beatitude, as he often called it, that he said comes silently, uninvited, to a mind that is silent and free of all movement of the past.
Mm-hmm. And he also said that the energy is so far beyond belief that the comprehension of the thinking mind can't even conceive it.
Right, but Bob is saying, well, Krishnamurti is holding out some promise of something. Bob is even sort of rejecting that.
Well, he is promising that if you follow this, it happens. But did he follow it? Did it happen?
For Bob, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did it happen for anybody? Well, perhaps it happened for me. I think it happened for me from the get-go, as I say, way back...
56, in the fall of 56.
Yeah, right within a week or two after I moved into the center and looked into it.
Right. Because UG says that JK sold tickets on a bogus chartered flight. Then Bob says, asks this question, are we ready to come to the realization that there is no way to free ourselves, nor is there any experience that can free us from the bondage of the cage that we have built through the use of thought?
I'm laughing at the Chris Murray selling tickets to a bogus flight. He didn't sell tickets. As a matter of fact, he wouldn't allow any charges to be made for any of his appearances for years.
Yeah,
and then finally they started putting them in to auditoriums and Masonic areas and etc. And in order to cover it, the donations were taken, or a minimal charge was. And then I think at Santa Monica they actually had tickets, and everybody was astounded. It wasn't that it was very much; it was just that in order to get people in, that there was too many people coming, and they had to have tickets to get in. You know.
Right, and that was the one we went down there in March 70 and went to his lecture at Santa Monica, and that's the period when, to me, you were still living at Richmond Beach. You definitely, to me, living there when we went down and saw Joe Dunsloan, the D-cell manufacturer, and the Christian Murty talk, and that's also when I saw Zappa that same week. Mm-hmm. And then we went to that concert. Remember the Zappa concert at the Olympia?
Yeah, you remember that?
Yes. And
you guys got in and I didn't? Now what happened?
You and Paul came late and either couldn't get in or just came late.
I went with you.
No, you didn't go with us. No.
I went with you and Carolyn. And Paul wasn't there that I recall. But you and I, and we were at the back door and you managed to know somebody and get in. And so I was standing out on the street near the back door. And so I walked over and was kind of standing by the curb. And all of a sudden I hear this terrible crash, and there's an accident that occurs about 150 feet away from me. And the car flies up into the air and it lands down crashing right toward me. And as I pull back, the front edge of it hits the curb and then slides along the curb.
It offers that.
It was an upside down. Yeah. While you were in there doing that, that's what the experience I had.
Yes, and I remember coming out, and there you were. We bumped into you in the millions of people. Well, there we found you coming in, or, you know, at the end.
I was there all the time waiting for you to come out. I went there with you.
I definitely don't remember you going with me. I would have.
I remember that whole thing intensely.
So will you imagine I didn't come back and get you?
No. I just knew that you had the chance to get in there, and I was just along for the ride, so to speak. Even though I think it was my car, and I don't remember for sure. But anyway, so I just accepted you were getting in, and so I was going to wait until the.
It was over,
and then meet you afterwards.
And we came out, and I remember you coming towards me all happy and beaming, and Paul, I think, showed up there, you know.
Uh-huh.
But definitely, I remember driving around L.A. in that period in the old car, and that had a lot of neat moods of late at night going on the highways with you, Paul. Maybe Paul was driving, and you were in the front passenger seat. And we did a lot of that in the 70s, drove around L.A., you know, in some
way. See how you are. you just created a wonderful song and dance away from some of that. But that's all right. But that's what you heard me reiterate what happened.
Yeah, no, I'm not dancing away from it. I'm just remembering driving the car.
Yeah, okay.
If we drove to the concert, that was one of many pleasurable driving experiences. It was very interesting. I remember one night was the first time I heard Led Zeppelin was on that car radio. You know,
uh-huh.
Paul put the radio on, and this the first of the heavy metal kind of music came out. Okay, so we're talking about, UG. So he says, are we ready to come to the realization that there's no way to free ourselves, nor is there any experience that can free us from the bondage of the cage that we have built through the use of thought? Now, you found a way to live a para, around, behind, above, below thought.
Well, that's the whole point was thought was the problem. See, they're using thought all the time on everything, and I'm not.
Right, and he says UG doesn't use thought. And I tell him, well, Dave lived like UG.
Ah, yeah. There you go again.
No, that's what I told him. I said, you know, if you had hung around Dave, you'd see he may not have been running around trying to talk to people like Eugene did, but Dave claims he lives below thought, the exact same thing that Eugene says, and Bob Carr is quoting Eugene all through the book, and Eugene's saying the same things you say.
Uh-huh.
And Bob is thinking about that all the way through, agreeing with it, but still thinking about it. You get my point?
Yeah.
Thinking
still
about,
looking for the gaff.
Yeah. Okay, so then Bob says, perhaps we have no choice in the matter. We must necessarily believe in some idea or other. We cannot live without belief.
No.
See, you think there's a way through that.
Belief is a bundle of conditioning. If you want bundles of conditioning and you're in thought, and that's belief.
Yeah.
Okay, if you must have that, then you are nowhere near awareness because it's too low a vibe.
Right. So he's thinking we must necessarily believe in some idea or other. He's talking about the human condition.
Yeah.
We cannot live without
the subhuman condition.
Yeah. The subgenius condition. We cannot live without belief or some form of hope that in the future we will be free or that understanding will dawn on us. The brain, or mind if you like, can never be free of conflict, of the pairs of opposites, unless by...
Oh, crap.
Good to get your reaction here. Unless by some chance all its thoughts, memories, and the whole cultural background are flushed out of your system.
Well, that's also a thing that I want to stop and talk about.
Okay.
Because that's an illusion. They cannot be flushed out of your system. That's the same thing as denial processes or stuff like that. Because awareness is present in the present time, and every split second thereafter is a new moment. And so if you're carrying any, if you're flushing something out of your system, it may arrive you at one moment. The next moment requires just as much of a release, constantly, without ceasing. That's why when they asked Krishnamurti when he meditated, he said, I never cease.
Mm.
And I referred to the Bible as saying, pray without ceasing. And I'm referring that to the manner in which, in being left to myself, to my own devices, The vibration that I live in is higher than thought. But if I am called back into thought, I can function. But I don't like it when I am made to come back in thought, and it wastes and takes away the level of experience that is in the land of essence. It's heaven, it's nirvana, it's samadhi, all these names, but to me, it's a lack of thought, therefore, higher vibes coming in. That thought, for instance, if you take an energy line and move it along, it is free and aware. But if that line turns back and looks at itself and starts going parallel in the other direction, this is thought. You stop doing that and it's back into awareness. So it's very easy to catch thought that you realize the vibes have gone that way and you're going that way. You stop it and he goes, and of course he was told by Krishnamurti to stop. So what do you think Krishnamurti was telling him? You know?
Yeah. No, that's very very eloquent. And
hey, Bob and Dave, can I interrupt for a sec?
Yeah.
I know a little about UG Krishnamurti from a couple YouTubes I watched about him, and a little bit I've read, and then what you've disclosed about him so far.
Yeah.
It doesn't appear to me he has a sense of humor, and this is where I like. this is I think I think Dave is really enlightened because he's laughing at all this stuff, and UK appeared to be quite serious.
Well, you have to read this whole book to get UG. UG does have a great sense of humor. I mean, you look at a few YouTubes, that's what they featured, but no, the guy has a great sense of humor.
Okay, well, I'll butt out.
Yeah. Anyway, about the sense of humor bit, let's go back and look at Gayananda Bharati.
Yeah.
And his having been in prison and writing this book on the psychology of humor,
right,
which became a bestseller in Europe thereafter. But the main thesis was that if you tell a story that is going a certain direction methodically, and the punchline is not in that line but way over here, that jump that goes from here to there because you get it is a spiritual jump, and that's what causes the laughter, is the spiritual jump jiggles you through and you laughing.
Right.
And so that the same way with catching the joke in your own mind. Every time, it's like one of the early things I remember before acid and studying Krishnamurti at the Center of Integration. It was either me or somebody else, but I do remember somebody saying, "Do you know what I found my mind doing?" You know, we were noticing these things our minds were doing and laughing at it and sharing it with others. You understand?
Yeah, yeah.
That is the joy, and as Don Blanding wrote the book, joy is an inside job, you know, and joy is spontaneity that only happens once. You try to repeat joy, then you're using thought, which goes into pleasure, and then surely goes into pain. So if you ever try to repeat a joy, you're headed for pain in the lowest vibes. If you're in joy, you're out of thought.
Right.
Spontaneity.
Yes. There was a thought I had there. So, I don't know.
That's a brilliant statement.
Yeah.
I got another joke about that.
Okay.
About the guy who said, "Well, you know that God decided to become human, but the only way he could experience humanity is to forget that he was God."
Yeah.
And so that's what he did. He came down here, and then after a while, somebody heard that was a possibility of what happened, and then looked around and said, "Well, you know, it's me." And somebody else said, "No, it's me." So anyway, here were these people that had followers around them because they were God, and this was God. Well, I found that the ones in between these different groups were the ones who said, "I don't know." Mm. And my opinion is, if God had decided to enter into man and to forget that he was God, then the only place that he would be one of those who said, "I don't know." Which you just said a while ago.
Yeah,
God.
Yeah. And I'm glad we ran through that because now I know.
Uh-oh. Your wings just fell off.
But it's only a cortexual pattern. I just want to clarify that Bharati, that name, refers to Leopold Fischer. You know, just for someone who's listening, back in the center in the late 50s, the great guy goes on to be a professor of anthropology and everything. That's I just wanted to mention that.
He came from being a professor of Benares and then went through et cetera, but the ochre robe. You know.
Yes. So I'll repeat that last sentence.
The book.
Yes. So I'll repeat what you have just done an exegesis on. The brain. Exegesis.
Don't you love that word?
Yeah, exegesis. The brain or mind, if you like, can never be free of conflict, of the pairs of opposites, unless by some chance all its thoughts, memories, and the whole cultural background are flushed out of your system. That sentence makes you vomit, right? I'm saying that.
Well, I say that's an illusion because the real reality of, in other words, his goal is to be free.
Mm.
The only way is to be free is to be free, not through fleshing.
that can get you somewhere, but it may get you to just one moment of the endless moments of awareness.
Yeah.
And you have to have just as much release in every moment after that. So it's like, leave the flushing out of it, get to the attention, and don't break it to go back and pick it up again.
Right. So he says, trying to create a picture of the two men, the two Krishnamurtis, and the effect they have had on my life is most difficult. The effect cannot be measured by a yardstick. Jiddu Krishnamurti pointed out how absurd all organized religions are and how we are trapped by the beliefs and hopes in some kind of a future. I was impressed by Jiddu Krishnamurti's insights into both the structure of consciousness and the way that the structure binds and shapes our brains. I was intrigued by his descriptions of the mystical states he had experienced and the mystery of life that he seemed to know about. But at some point in my journey, I felt that I had had enough of his teaching, for it seemed only to lead to a wall that I couldn't penetrate.
There again he comes teaching, you see.
Yeah, it's not teaching.
And that's the thing that Krishnamurti himself challenged people about.
Yes, yeah.
Because if you're making it into a catechism, then of course you leave it.
Right.
But then you leave Krishnamurti's catechism, and Krishnamurti didn't have one to start with.
Right. Now, Bob would probably agree with you if he's here now. But he had to write something because UG told him to write a history of his life, because UG said you had an interesting life. So he is engaging in the impossible attempt to get beyond.
Oh, I think it's wonderful. I mean, what Bob has done is wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have had a record of things I've said, and you want to verify whether the... It's like my veracity is being challenged all the way through this and coming out shining like a light, you know.
Yeah.
And that's my joy, is the fact that all these different things I've said to you over the many years that are being brought up now and compared, I mean, these things that Bob Carr says are way stations that are parked along the way of these stories I've told you.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And so you're doing this, you're doing like a zipper, but actually what you're doing is you're causing me to recall and light up my life.
Right, yeah, all right. And I think Bob recognizes that's what we're doing, and he wants to do it. He wants to go...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think you're an excellent...
catalyst for it.
For that, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe even more than I am.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
There may be some of that to go on between this, but I think the...
Well, it's a surprise to Bob to meet someone who knew your life like I know it, and then and heard about him, and then I'm in between you two, and you can get a more perfect liaison than the
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Yeah.
And it's almost as though it's one step removed for him. Now, one of the things I have found that I never work through somebody to somebody else. That is not my way.
Right.
Because I visualize this great, powerful spotlight that's going up through the floor to the ceiling and beyond, and et cetera, and I'm standing on one side, and there's somebody else standing on the other side. And if I'm going to relate, I relate through that light. Now, in the process of relating through that light, I lose something, and so do they. Mm. So my relationship in awareness is not a gain, it's a losing, but a lightening. All right, but if there's somebody over here off to the side and I relate to them, because I don't want to relate through the right light, so I relate to them to relate to the other person. We zigzag over here and miss the light in order to avoid losing something. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I'm talking about relating in awareness, it is not a gain, it's a loss, except you get lighter.
Right. Good. Okay, so he says, Krishnamurti, I felt I'd had enough of his teaching, for it seemed only to lead to a wall that I couldn't penetrate. He created a blueprint which led you to the river, but showed no way to cross over. And okay. Is there another shore? I mean, very interested if he gets to hear this laughter that you're in your response to it. And is there another shore, or is that all wishful thinking on our part? The teacher can point out that there is the door, but you have to find out how to walk out by yourself, not depending on another for help. You have to find out for yourself, and perhaps there is no way to cross over to the other side. That realization may break the center that holds the illusion that you are a separate self apart from the world. So both Krishnamurtis are capable of pushing you to the edge. That's all they can do.
All right, let me make a comment.
Yeah.
Rai's return to essence is an analogy for the end of separateness.
Yes.
That Rai is the first separateness.
Yeah.
That, did you ever get that before?
No, I knew. I've always knew, said that. Done it on
okay,
the radio.
All right. That Rai is the first separateness.
Yes.
And the return of Rai to essence is the end of separateness, as an analogy. And perhaps as more of that occurs, a completely different nature of the dimensional man is discovered by whatever we are.
Right. And now I talked a bit about this to Bob. I said that, one, any human being through time and history could have acted out personally the return of Rai to essence. But culture was, human-made culture was acting out this, and Rai might have been, we'll find this out when you bring up the point of what is left after Rai's return, but the Rai action is like the second item in the Bible, who has the right to create his own establishment after he's out of the Garden of Eden. So all this culture seems to have a direction, as McLuhan poetically presented it, from the extension of our senses through speech, then writing, then books, then machines, then electricity, and then the space, then the satellite extends the whole planet. There is an order within culture or within the world of Rai. Now that the psychological and the cultural come together, Rai returned in January 67 to the plane of essence. And at that time, McLuhan was saying that television was the first medium where the viewer was the screen. The viewer is not the screen when they look at a book. It creates hyper-separate.
In those days, there were a lot of live shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they started canning them so that hardly any of television was live. As long as there was live shows, then there was an interrelationship of people with it, and it couldn't be controlled by politicians and bankers.
Right.
And so the only way to stop it was to not have any live shows. Well, ultimately, about the only live shows were a few news shows and sports. And then after a while, it was like only sports. But even that had a six-second delay. So if you're going to tune into it, you have to tune in to six seconds before it comes over the screen.
Right. Now, by the mid-60s, you started having the end of live TV because the computer is coming in. And as McLuhan was saying, new technology, new environment that changes the previous environments, changes TV. And it's the computer, 40 years later, that collapsed this past week, the computerized virtual economy. But it was the computer that allowed us to move into this weird world that many people blame the Republicans on. This virtual economy began, and that was post-live TV. And to me, that was the computer brought in the cobwebs of Rai in the cultural realm of human-made artifacts. You get what I'm saying?
Meaning just what was left over.
Yes, that we had the live experience collectively with television, and right when it's going to...
But when the phrase cobwebs of Rai is what's left over after he's gone.
Yeah, a few left over. It's like the last gas, the last after images of Rai. And we had the live TV experience up to the middle 60s, which is about the time Rai returns to essence. And then I think it came through you that there were still the cobwebs of Rai, and that is the network, the internet, the computer lattice that grew from 68 till 2008. 40 years of a weird effect on culture.
Uh-huh.
And we've just witnessed the collapse of that.
So we're really moving forward to a real complete post-Rye situation right now. And we're watching the Eloy, Tu, Rye, and Lofty, that's Rye is R-A-I, those four people, is Goldman Sachs, Paulson, and Bernanke, and Securities and Exchange Commissioner Cox, and Bush. Those are the four, Rye, Eloy, Tu, Lofty, trying to keep the cobweb going. And according to you, Dave, it ain't working.
Well, according to that September, you see, this all started around September, they said the 7th, but I think it started September the 5th, the 39th anniversary of
yes.
the apex of polarity.
Which is discussed in our Paranoia Magazine article in the first 2 hours of this series.
Yeah.
I think we've done, we're doing 20.
If somebody was really looking through the structure of our conversations all this time,
yeah,
there would be incredible information of where things have come from, where things are, and where they can be going. In other words, I know that according to the things that Paul and I talk about, the forces in movement, that these forces are fairly obvious. And in some case, almost have form, a whole
yep.
series of, but then they have a changing of positions and the gravitational relationships to these all create vortexes and et cetera. And who knows, maybe that's the way in which the psychic centers of our bodies are manufacturing our bodies.
Yes,
in a similar manner. Well, all right, you take that and separate them all and spin them all out and put them out there in these other forms. Then that is forces in movement. And sometimes you can read the forces in movement, you know what to follow and what to get out of the way of. And sometimes you know who is trying to play games with them. And that's been going on for a while now on the highest level. And, of course, the Bible calls it calumny in high places.
Yes.
During the end times. It would be calumny in high places.
Did you say during the end times?
During the end times.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it says that, but I think it's like in Revelation, it's talking about various things. Incidentally, if you look through these projections in Revelations for all these events, it also is the absolute structure of the psychic development plan.
The psychic development plans came through awareness.
Yeah. In other words, all these psychic development plans are the same thing as revelations.
Yes.
The seven seals are seven psychic centers, and et cetera. There's correlations, but basically it's what the body or the higher levels go through to become developed. By developed meaning assimilated in order to, in its correlation, manifest glory.
Yeah, it becomes sophisticated. You become sophisticated.
Yeah.
In all the richer meanings of that phrase, you become elevated sensory interplay. And that includes ecstasy. But I wanted to say that, yes, I agree that I've wanted to get you on tape for decades, and we did it 20 years ago.
Well, then when are you going to release my video with the licensing of the music?
Well, we're waiting for James to tell us about that.
Okay. We're waiting.
Yeah. But meanwhile, we're putting this out. I'm saying that we did it. We are doing a lot more in these 21 hours that we've got so far than are on that tape. Though that tape is a good primer, but the thing is that this is the time for it to be said what you're saying because of what we're witnessing. That's what I'm saying is the deep structure we're echoing right now in what we're talking about. We showed up right on time, when we started last March.
Bob and Dave, can I interrupt again?
Yeah.
Yes.
Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe last time you said that after Rye returns to essence, it still takes a while for Isis to return to essence.
Well, it doesn't necessarily, because you might say Isis is essence. See, because when Rai split into the dimension of man and Isis followed, it just means Rai was the only one that went in there, and when all of the rest of being as Isis moved into this, so it's like, in a sense, it doesn't really need to go anywhere because it's never really left essence. It's just accommodated its form so it could relate to Rai until he stopped running. So it's like the need for marriage and consummation for progeny has ended, according to that. And the people that are left here, if they become free of the run as a separateness and the need to correlate, then they can be individual consciousness discovering what is. Now, the what is has not been decided because, in the first place, the dimension of man was like a blank slate that they filled up. When they go and the slate is blanked off and there's a byproduct of the people left, it's like everybody on Earth suddenly taking an examination of this dimension without the intrusion of Rai and Isis.
Is there any way to relate...
Mostly involved with Isis because it's all within Isis anyway.
Is there any way to relate this to the Kabbalistic Tree of Life in the sense that when Rai fragments, that the ten sephira and all of the paths between them are born and like that, or are these two models too incongruent to be able to merge them?
Oh, they're absolutely congruent. It's like the key to all that can also be checked out through the tarot cards. That and that book, do you Bob, do you have a copy of the Poimandries?
Yes, not with me, but it's back in New York. You sent it to me.
Yeah, well, anyway, the Poimandries... I start slipping into that. It's just outrageous. that Poimandries approached the Godhead to complain that out of the 144,000 books that he was given to take care of, that all but 40,000 have been stolen by Set and taken away. And so he doesn't know what to do with what he's got left. And so the Godhead tells him to make pictograms. Well, ultimately, those wind up as the tarot. But also as a part of that whole structure are the four worlds. In other words, there are four worlds, and each world has 10 sephira and 22 paths, and the phrase we've been using about the way must be made clear, or make the way clear, is that if you start at Malkuth, you do not enter toward any of the sephira unless the path lights up and is made clear, and the gatekeeper in the sephira lets you in. If you don't do it that way, you're thrown into the clip-off, which is the dark side, and you may be there for generations. Anyway, now what was your question again? It had to do with... So anyway,
the
moving...
Rai, does the Rai relate to the... The Rai story relate to... Rai Nisus relate to the Kabbalistic?
Absolutely. In other words, these are like bits and pieces of the mosaic and the puzzle of what was discerned by the Kabbalists.
What are bits and pieces, the Kabbalah or the Rai Isis story?
The Rai Isis thing had bits and pieces, and then they did put together some kind of order, you see, with the four worlds.
Right.
And so that has a certain significance. But then the next level, that I you have the psychic centers, but one of the most significant things that I found, and when I finally told Art and Claire Pickering,
yeah,
I told him about it, and I showed it to him, and Pickering stood up after it. He says, I have looked for this for, I think he said 17 years. I don't know why the 17 comes in there, but I think he said he had looked for it for 17 years.
Looked for and, what? What had he looked for?
All right. Now, there is circuitry. You may not find this anyplace else. If you do, I would love to know about it. Because I'm not even sure how I got it, except seeing it and following it and letting myself develop. There's a circuitry that goes from the breastplate up alongside each side of the neck, over the top of the head, and a harness-like thing that comes from ear to ear at the back of the neck. And then there is an energy that starts above the front of the head. So I like to think that when the Buddha was sheltered by the snake, the cobra,
yeah,
that really is that circuitry that then comes and crosses over this loop that's crossed over the head, you see? Yeah, you know, up each side of the neck and up,
yeah,
over the top of the head. Okay, this is forward and crosses over that, and when it crosses there, that creates the halo. But the halo is just a byproduct of those energies through those two circuits.
Yeah.
But then as it goes down behind and crosses the back of the neck, then there is another halo-like energy that tucks into the brain. And then as it follows down the spine, it gets to the connectors to the shoulders, and goes down both arms. All right, now there's like lightning flashes from that, not halos, but lightning flashes, that then go and flash out of the armpits and out of the joints at the elbow and out of the hands. And then as it goes down beyond that point, the next point is just back of the circuit that started in the front. So these two connect the heart and the front and the back, and that has a glow rather than a lightning flash. And as it goes down further, when it gets down to, I think it's the fourth lumbar, approximately physically, there is this circle that goes counterclockwise in a loop over the head and down around, and is lit up like a circle of light. But then the next step is a step that you cannot enter with your will. Or when Jacob fought the angel of the Lord, this is where he got into trouble, and it also is where he walked with the limp the rest of his life. And as I walked with the limp, and as Bob Carr walked with the limp, and the Doobie walked with the limp. Did you know that?
You all walked with a limp.
Oh, yes. And it ties into this. And we all fought the angel of the Lord, apparently.
Yes.
Anyway, the way through, without having to go through that, is to surrender to God at that point where this loop is going counterclockwise. And if you can surrender to God totally, then there's a shift that goes to the third lumbar, I think. And the loop reverses and goes clockwise. And once that occurs, that's the Leiden. You heard of the Leiden?
Yeah.
It's the most hidden, the secret. Another clue, I'm saying 666, I want to tell you a clue about that. Anyway, the Leiden, and then the next thing is down to the coiled serpent in personification of like cosmic mind. Well, it's like, and from there is a spin-off that goes into another dimension, which is really cosmic awareness. Now, this is quite a statement I've made, and I would be very, very interested if you find anything like it anywhere else, just so that I know. But this is very, very important information that may be revelatory to many people, and of course, it's got the additional factor that it cannot be misused. I just defy somebody to try to be. Well, I don't care, but you know, if they do, they get into trouble. It's a glorious thing that is there if it goes to the surrender of to God, whatever you call it. But anyway, it's letting go totally without any holdouts. That before that thing will go clockwise in circling in light, and then on down into the coiled serpent, and then from there this wafting energy that's probably quantum physics regarding some kind of a hidden part of the proton, which is really Akasha. That's another dimension.
Right. Now, how do you spell Leiden?
I think it's L-Y-D-E-N, but I'm not
okay.
sure.
And you said, just back a minute, you said, and the might overjoy people. You were talking about if people, you'd be very interested if people heard this, would it be overjoyed, or you, I don't know, didn't get the word. It would overwhelm, it would overjoy people. You know, you were just talking about...
Well, it would really mess them up if they tried to go into that area without surrendering to God.
Oh, okay. And for the record, Poimandres is spelled Poimandres, and the Wikipedia, the Poimandres is defined as a chapter in the Corpus Hermeticum. It was originally written in Greek.
Yes, but this one, the Poimandres as I'm speaking out, is the one published by that Arizona group that, I can't remember, what were they called, the Theocentric?
Theosophical?
No, Theocentric or something. Anyway,
Not Pickering. Pickering didn't do this.
No, Pickering is the one who got me the book in the first place.
Right. And
he knew them and took me to see them. And I got a whole bunch of them and we distributed them. And then later I talked to them and asked them if I could make a movie. And they, you know, if I needed their approval or agreement for the copyrights. They said, we don't know whether you can copyright. He said, you got the information by Manly Palmer Hall and his thing all about it. He said, we don't think you can really copyright it. Well, I do know that this script, that this great epic poem that they wrote was channeled by a number of channels in that group. And so that is the one that I think should be. It may contain all the information as all the others, but this is, the, to me, one of the most perfect statements of awareness. I mean, like a blanket statement of awareness that I've ever seen.
Right.
You know, that it takes you to the Godhead and reveals all of the glories that happen, and then the mischief that was messing with the glories, and so on and so on. And the very last part of the book talks about government, what would a good government, the structure of a good government, which is priceless.
Yeah. You mean the fact they do that, or what they say?
This is the addenda. You know, it's like,
priceless that they add that?
Yes. It's really marvelous stuff.
Well, isn't that what people are looking for today? Today, September 22nd, good government in the media through Secretary of the Treasury?
Well.
So we come full circle, and it's been 3 hours, and you've been...
Bob, can I interrupt one more time?
Yeah. Well,
sure.
I'd just like, since I've taken us off in this direction, I've got this one more burning question. The green...
All right, burn away.
The green stone that... that is in the Ra'i story, is that related to the emerald tablet of Hermes Trismegistus?
I believe so. In other words, that's another version of it. Maybe that's the piece he brought. The tablet was brought through
by Ra'i.
Yeah, to me, any color would have done, except this is what I saw. I saw the redstone first. Well, I do know that the secret color is magenta, whose vibrations rotate clockwise. It's the only color that rotates clockwise. All the other colors rotate counterclockwise at various vibrations. Now, the red, not the magenta, but the red starts about 250,000 vibrations per second. The purple or violet is about 750,000 vibrations per second. But you take the midpoint between those two is lime green. And lime green has a vibration that's exact, and it's going counterclockwise, but it's vibrating at exactly the same rate as magenta, which is going clockwise. So if you move yourself into position to tune into the lime green with, like, strobes, then you can see right over to, and jump to the secret color. And, of course, the secret color is what the Pope wears, too.
Hmm. And I'm looking at the color magenta in the Wikipedia, and it looks purple to me.
Well, that I know, but magenta is a combination between purple and red, midpoint,
okay.
You know.
Right, and what, purple would be a combination of blue and red?
No, purple is well, a lot of people think that, blue and red, but you'd have to look into the vibrational scale. They've got it down. I think we got some of the information from Corning Glasswork.
I asked about the Tree of Life because I'm looking at a picture of the Tree of Life that has the paths connected by the tarot. And there's the blue sapphira there, which is mercy, and opposing it is a red sapphira, which is severity. And those are on the left and right
pillars.
Columns. And then in the center column, there is a what looks like a purple or a violet sapphira. And then because...
Now, that may... it's like there is, aside from the... Is that 11th, the 11th sapphira? Which is Christ consciousness or something?
Well, that would be, I guess, above the tree, because there's 10 sapphira in the tree.
Well, I can't remember, but I thought you, if you went...
Plus, then you have the sapphira, which is sort of the invisible one.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Okay.
That's the Christ consciousness that is a byproduct of the other thing being perfect. And then, of course, the crown of that sephira, it becomes Malkuth for the next tree.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
But the tree I'm looking at, the Christ consciousness, would be the Tifereth, which is on the center column.
Yes.
Below the crown.
Yes.
And it's above the purple one.
Yeah, I think so. See, I never really studied these things. I looked at them way back there when. But after I started giving readings in Olympia, and I had been giving them, let's see, the Mafia gal was asking the questions, and I would be giving readings. And every once in a while, other people would be asking questions, and then all of us, there'd be this silence for a while, and she would ask a question, and the energy would come, and I'd answer it right away. And she just loved this, and I didn't know what, I said, what's going on? She says, well, I see you lit up the tree again. I said, what do you mean? So then she told me what the tree was, and that I, every time I gave a reading, I would light up the tree, and if I got to a certain point, then she knew the question to ask to continue to light up the tree and give me energy. And she says, this happens in all your readings. Didn't you know that? I said, I don't even know what you're talking about the tree. Tell me about it. And then I said, oh, I've seen this. I saw it, you know, back there somewhere. And I said, but the fact that in giving the readings, I was lighting up the tree became very interesting to me. And therefore, I looked into it a little bit more.
Well, what tree was she referring to?
The tree of life, which has got the 10 sephira and then 22 bath.
Okay, well, I'm looking at my website, and somebody sent me an ad campaign put up by Yahoo, I think, called Start Wearing Purple. So
I've been hearing about purple all over the place, and I thought, did you start that?
Yeah, well, some people think so, but somebody pointed it.
Well, I thought so.
Yeah, I think I did. But the thing in this commentary, I post that, and then someone says, "Well, we all are." Then he quotes an article: "Light wavelength analysis nets purple earth." And then there's a quote: "The retinal pigment in halobacteria absorbs green light and reflects red and blue light. Chlorophyll absorbs red and blue light and reflects green." Some scientists think this mirror relationship suggests chlorophyll evolved to exploit parts of the spectrum unused.
All right, and there's your D cell and S cell.
Yeah.
You got the information of the D cell and the S cell there.
Yeah. And so that's, I just wanted to mention that. So let's, beautiful ending, Dave. We end with purple and magenta.
All right, now, Scott, did that cover it? Is there anything more?
No, we're
or
good.
Scott? Huh?
We're good. I loved all that information. You talked about the energy circuitry. That's incredible. We'll look into that.
Yes. Be careful. Especially, you get to a certain point, be sure that you surrender. And if it takes you a long time to surrender, then take as long as it takes before, because you don't move to the next point. The way is open, and then it happens. And when it happens, you know that you didn't do it by will. If you know you did it by will, you have to be very careful, you know. In other words, you get impatient, think, oh, this should don't do it. Okay.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave.
Yes.
Very good. Excellent. Excellent. We'll continue on through Bob Carr.
Uh-huh. And then what are we going to do?
We're going to do good government.
No, no, don't even answer. Don't even think about it.
Yeah.
That was my question. That was just as bad as Bob saying, what's the gap?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Bob will like that. Okay, thank you, Dave.
All right. Lots of light around you.
Yep.
And let's see, what's
pass
all the rest?
Pass it on, hack it back, and when the way is made clear.
Yes, and we understand that when the way is made clear, even better today.
Yes, that's true. Thank
and
you.
Then there's au revoir.
Au revoir, right.